Good morning, everyone. Nice to see you on this sunshine, snowy day. The time is 10:03 on Thursday, February 26th, and the meeting of the House Special Committee on Fisheries will come to order. Members present are Representative McCabe, Representative Elam, Representative Vance, Representative Hemshute, and myself, Chair Stutes. We have a quorum to conduct business. Please be sure and silence your phones. And we ask members that if you would like to pass a message, do not approach the table here. If you get a hold of my committee aide, Jane Pearson, she'd be delighted to help you out with passing that note. I'd like to thank Andrew Magnuson of the House Fisheries Committee Secretary and Emily Mesh from the Juneau LIO. Thank you both for joining us today. At today's meeting, we'll be considering two bills, House Bill 304, Sport Fish Surcharge by Representative McCabe, and House Bill 253, the Fisheries Enhancement Loan Program by Representative Bynum. So our first bill up today is House Bill 304 by Representative McCabe. We last heard this bill on Thursday, February 19th, where we had an introduction by Representative McCabe and his staff, Ms. Alameda. We have worked with the sponsor and have taken suggestions from the committee to draft a CS version G. Representative Hemshute, may I have a motion to bring the CS before this committee, please?
Yes. Chair Stutes, I move to adopt the proposed committee substitute for HB 304 work draft 34-LS1375-G as the committee's working document.
Thank you. And I will object for the purposes of discussion, and I will ask my committee aide, Jane Pearson, to please to explain the changes in the CS to this committee.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Jane Pearson, staff to the House Fisheries Committee, and I'd like to explain the changes from version I to version G in House Bill 304. In Section 2, which are lines, which is page 1, lines 12 through 13, that biennial report has been changed to a report every 4 years. In Section 3, AS 1605-130I, on page 1, line 14, and through page 2, lines 1 through 10, changes how monies in the sports fish angler access account shall be disseminated, first to produce the report, with the remainder to be allocated to programs intended to directly benefit licensed purchasers by developing, improving, and maintaining access, facilities, and other infrastructure and services for non-motorized sports fishing. In Section 5, in Version I, AS 1605-340I was removed because Version G no longer has a sunset date, and the subsection is therefore no longer necessary. In Section 5, AS 1605-340, page 2, line 22 through page 3, line 11, changes to the angler access surcharge from $1 for sports fish licenses to a specified amount for each sports fish license type. And the new scale can be found on page 3 of the G version of the bill. The section still maintains that residents who are eligible for a low-income resident license or a free military license are exempt from paying the surcharge. In Section 7 and Section 10 in Version I were eliminated since Version G no longer includes a sunset date. These two sections were in Version I and were deleted from G. Section 7 were the repealers for January 1, 2032, and which was the sunset date found in Section 10. Section 7 and 8, page 3, lines 18 through 19, are conforming amendments to the effective dates in Version G of House Bill 304.
Does this committee have any questions regarding the changes? Representative McCabe.
I don't really have a question, Madam Chair. I just want to say thank you to you and your staff for helping put this together. I appreciate the committee substitute. I appreciate that we put the table back in, which is sort of the normal way that we've seen it before on page 3. I also appreciate the four-year requirement instead of mine, two reports, or mine was sort of nebulous, and I really appreciate that addition. And I think that that kind of conforms to what the commissioner said the other day. And I also, I like the fact that we took the sunset date out, frankly. I think that this is an important report going forward, and every 4 years kind of spreads it out. And so 2 decades, we'll have, you know, we'll have 5 reports, and we'll be able to establish and keep an idea in our heads of what we need for allocative resources. And in the other one as well is the angler access account. Continuing to put a little money in there when we can will be helpful, I think, for sport fishing. So all of those are things that my constituents are interested in. In fact, I think the Matsu Fishing, the Board of Fish, is meeting this afternoon, and I'll be talking to them about this. So I appreciate it. I appreciate your help and your committee as well, or and your staff as well.
Perfect. It was certainly our pleasure to work collaboratively with you, Representative McCabe, Representative Vance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question about the original report in 2007, the economic impacts and contributions of sport fishing in Alaska in 2007. With no sunset date and every 4 year report, I like that as well, that it's going to be every 4 years and create a consistency. No sunset date is a little concerning to me, because the sunset date in the legislature forces us to go back and take a look when we forget over the course of time what's been implemented. However, I see the value of keeping that in and understanding the economy here. But the question I have is, in 2007, did the state still have the freshwater logbook program to know how much fish was being taken from our rivers to help build the original economic report that this future report is going to be based on?
Thank you, Representative Vance. We have both the commissioner of the Department of Fish and Game, Commissioner Doug Vincent Lang, as well as Joe Feckel, his right-hand person, with us today. We're very fortunate. So maybe, yeah. So if you would put yourself on the record, yeah. And did you hear Representative Vance's question?
No, I need to have it repeated. My name is Doug Vincent Lang, Commissioner of Alaska Department of Fish and Game. I think you asked me that, did we have logbook data available in 2007 to inform it? I have to listen, 2007, that was 25. I'm not sure if it was there or not. We had statewide harvest survey information that went into the survey, but in the economic survey, but I'm not sure whether in 2007 we had the saltwater logbook and freshwater logbook programs operational.
Follow up. Representative Vance.
So the reason that I asked that is because a great report is built on great data. Right. And my concern is that we had some provisions in place to have data based on the sport fishery at one time, and we currently don't have that freshwater logbook program going. Mm-hmm. And my question that I asked you last time was how we were going to build this report moving forward. So I just want to share that my intent behind supporting this bill is that we continue to rely on actual data, not just surveys and perceptions of what people say is contributing to the economy, but I'd like to have that dollar value connected back to the fish. Yeah. To be able to make informed decisions with the Board of Fish, because if it's not tied to the fish, then it's tourism. And I'm not very familiar with what was taking place in 2007. And so any information you could provide on that, but also moving forward in the department is going to have direction on maintaining this in the future. What you establish by regulation, the authority that we're giving you in this, I think is going to help make a robust report.
Okay. Yeah. And through the chair, if I could, I'm just trying to think back. 2007. That was a long time ago. We'll get you the information we had that went into this in terms of input data. We clearly will, for the new survey that go out, we'll have saltwater logbook data pretty much statewide. We'll take a look at whether we probably will not have freshwater logbook data statewide, but we have other means to get participation and harvest the fish in those fisheries and catch and release fisheries. We're going through a current upgrade on the statewide harvest survey because I, for one, had some skepticism that recall bias from a year ago was sufficiently doing that. So we're updating that whole statewide harvest survey to basically make it a more frequent callback. So we'll basically have a more of an in-season number. We'll survey anglers a month after they participated, and then we'll build it up into an annual estimate. But you won't get that report trying to ask you what you caught in February the previous year, the next February. You'll get that questionnaire in the mail now sometime in March or April.
Follow up.
Just one more for clarification. So on the survey, are you taught, do the sport fish, the freshwater sport fish charters, are they required to send you a survey like we are for personal use? Because I understand the survey that you're talking about for me as an Alaskan and, right, and participating in like dib netting. But what do the charters that have tourists coming, what are they required to report to the department?
It depends upon where you're operating in the state. If in some places in the Kenai River, we still have some kind of an in-season assessment of those programs. In other areas like rainbow trout in Western Alaska, we have no logbook requirement. There used to be a logbook requirement for freshwater, but the legislature ended that.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Before I take your question, Representative McCabe, since I have Mr. Feckel and the good commissioner in the hot seat, maybe you could tell us some of the effects of the changes that were made in this CS to the department. Please.
For the record, Joe Felkel, legislative liaison for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. So we did take a look at this committee substitute, and we were able to run an initial analysis with the numbers. We do anticipate the revenue to be generated at about around $900,000 a year. So that would provide us sufficient funds to fund our current angler access program. Those projects can range from construction of trails and great walks, fish cleaning stations, as Representative Vance has mentioned at a prior hearing, land acquisition, access roads, bridges, signage, camping facilities, restrooms, parking area improvements. And it could also help pay for some of the engineering costs related to those planning and construction. It could also help pay for operation and maintenance of angler access facilities. And it can also just – those funds can be used to help increase public awareness of these facilities and angler access opportunities. This revenue that would be generated could go towards all of those different kinds of projects. I mean, I do have some examples of recent ones that we've completed if the committee would like us to go through that. But just generally speaking, that's the revenue we anticipate to be generated and the types of projects this funding would go towards.
And to follow up on that, that would be after the cost of the report.
Correct. So the way
that
the bill
take
is
a
drafted.
Priority.
Yes. The way the bill is drafted, Madam Chair, is it would first go to the survey, then any additional revenue would go towards these angler access projects.
Quickly, and then I promise I will go to you, Representative McCabe. Will this have any effect on Dingell Johnson funds in any capacity?
To the Chair, yes. In a way, so our current angler access program does use some Dingell Johnson funds. And so this would provide a dedicated revenue stream for that program, meaning those DJ funds could be used for other purposes.
Thank you. Representative McCabe, yeah. Your turn.
Could I just real quick?
Certainly.
So I just want to make sure the committee understands this. So there's a set aside under federal law that says 15% of your funds have to go into boating access projects. So that doesn't change this at all. But we can't put non-boating access and make them eligible for that voting access set aside. So we've struggled over the last 4 or 5 years, and that's why the governor introduced the surcharge on angler access a while ago, is how do we pay for these non-boating access projects, which are kind of critical around the state. We're finding more and more people don't have boats and they want to still get out and do things. So that directly competes with the rest of the DJ's projects that are in the Division of Sportfish. So this would actually provide some money to provide those services and non-boating access out there. And then that would potentially, we could use it to match DJ, because a lot of these are eligible for DJ, but it just basically ensures that we're not doing these angler access projects at the expense of some other important stock assessment programs.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative McCabe.
Thanks. So a couple things. I was really interested to find out that our non-resident license is 376,022, and our resident license is only 259,517. It's kind of interesting. I mean, especially if you're a tourism person or a lodge or somebody like that, that's the kind of data that we're looking for, is that kind of thing. I'd also like to bring up that Representative Vance and I were at dinner the other night in a local establishment, and we were talking about, she called them ghost boats, and the troller who was sitting next to us said, no, those are bear boats. So I remember a discussion about that, but bear boats are apparently where there is a lodge. They have dozens of boats, no guides, so that would leave out the logbook thing, because there's no guides, right? And they give you a GPS with the instructions on how to operate the boat, and you go out and fish. Non-resident, somebody who's lodged, that goes to the lodge. I think it's important that the survey cover that kind of activity. If you're surveying a lodge, how many bear boats do you have? How many bear boat clients do you have? Do you have any guides? Those would be important numbers for the allocative stuff that you're talking about, because this troller told me that he has seen dozens of fish boxes go through the airport from those lodges. Yeah, he was
thousands.
Yeah, he was not happy, and he was a local Juneau troller, and I don't blame him. You know, that is maybe a loophole that we need to look at for regulation. Maybe. I don't know if we need to get into statute on it, but it might be something that you're concerned about. So my point is I'm hopeful that this survey will help identify that loophole and maybe work to close it, or at least understand the amount of fish that is going out through those lodges.
Thank you.
Bear boats.
Are there other questions, Representative Himshute?
Through the chair, Commissioner, I would love for your comments on Representative.
Yeah, so we've been, that issue of bareboat charters is a growing issue. There's two issues. One is the number of boats that are being rented out as a bareboat charter. That's one issue that we're going to be willing to try to tackle over this next year, get an accurate count of how many of these vessels are being used for bareboat charters. Number two is the harvest off of those. That's a little bit more difficult, because on a chartered outfit log vessel, the guide is responsible for the reporting of that harvest. You don't know who is the responsible entity in a bareboat charter. So, but when we're redesigning the harvest survey, we're going to also ask whether an individual participated by renting a boat. So we're going to have an indirect harvest number off of those vessels by the redesign of the harvest survey. So at the end of the year, we should know better off how many of these anglers were fishing bareboat charters and what their harvest was.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
Other questions? Representative Vance?
I do have one technical question. On the report, we just say report, and wondering what the intent is on distribution. I know that in the past few years in the legislature, we've been putting in the word electronic report. That way they don't have to print a publication. It can be digital to save money on that resource. But this one, maybe you have a different intent. So I'd like to hear from the commissioner what you see the distribution would look like, and what's helpful that we write in statute so that you aren't onerously having to provide a paper copy to every department, to the legislature. What would help you? And is this report going to be distributed across the state? You know, like how is this one going to work?
Well, I would through the chair. I would hope that we would get a report back from the consultant that we hired to do this, and it's probably going to be a fairly big report that outlines all the data that went into it and a variety of other things, but that we would use that report to produce a glossy report, a summary report that we would be both paper and electronic that we could hand out. I don't want envision printing hundreds of copies of the big report and sending it. That would probably be housed on our website.
Thank you. Other questions? With that, if there are no other questions and no other objections, I am going to remove my objection and I'm going to take a brief at ease. Come back to on record, please. So with that, we have not had our public testimony on House Bill 304. And I will open public testimony. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify on House Bill 304, sport fish surcharge? Seeing no one, and I don't believe there's anyone online either. Oh, yes, there is. Five new, let's see here. Nope, everybody's here that's online too, or that they show. So with that, I will close public testimony. And Representative Hemshute, if I could have a motion, please.
Madam Chair, I move to report HB 304 version 34-LS1375X.
Let me try that again. I move to report HB 304 version 34-LS1375G out of committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note.
Thank you.
And we'll have the economic impact for commercial fishery surcharge bill next.
Yeah. With that, House Bill 304, version 34-LS1375-G moves out of committee with individual recommendations and the company fiscal note. And we will take a brief at ease. On record. Next up, we have House Bill 253, Fisheries Enhancement Loan Program by Representative Bynum. This is our first hearing on House Bill 253, and here to present the bill today is Representative Bynum and his Chief of Staff, Trevor Shaw. So if you would come up to the table, which you are doing, and identify yourself and tell us about your bill, please.
Yes. Thank you, Chair Stutes, Vice Chair Edgman, and the Fisheries Committee. My name, for the record, is Jeremy Bynum. I'm representative for House District 1. That's Ketchikan, Wrangell, Metlakatla, North Prince of Wales, and Hyder, and a few other spots. So I really appreciate the invitation to be here today to present House Bill 253. This is the Fisheries Enhancement Loan Program. If you excuse me, I have to get my glasses out for a moment. I don't know why I forget them, but it's happening to me that I've got to put these on nowadays. My plan is, if that's okay, Madam Chair, is I'm just going to give a few brief comments. I will then turn it over to Mr. Shaw to go through a bill overview and the sectional analysis, and then any questions that you might have. And I believe there are also some invited testimony that might be available today as well.
Sounds like an excellent plan, Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Fisheries Enhancement Loan Program has long played a vital role in sustaining commercial sport and subsistence fisheries in our state. The program provides critical access to capital for hatchery infrastructure, operations that strengthen fish stocks and supports coastal economies. Under current law, the loan eligibility is limited to qualified regional associations and approved nonprofit corporations. This bill extends the eligibility to include federally recognized tribal organizations that operate fish hatcheries and Indian reservations or under a federal permit. So the bill ensures that the eligibility for tribal organizations are treated consistently alongside these other entities, recognizing their importance and role in fishery enhancement across Alaska. This bill will make a few conforming changes to the authority of the commissioner to include the eligibility for tribal organizations and maintains the existing loan caps, preserves which will preserve the fiscal elements to ensure that it has expanding access. By incorporating federally recognized tribal organizations in the Fisheries Enhancement Program, this bill strengthens collaboration, supports the hatchery infrastructure, and reinforces the long-term sustainability of the fisheries in our state. So with that, Madam Chair, I will turn it over to Mr. Shaw for an overview and the sectional analysis.
Thank you, Representative Bynum. Thank you, Chair Stutes, members of the committee. Just a brief overview of the Fisheries Enhancement Revolving Loan Fund.
Mr. Shaw, could you identify yourself for the record, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Trevor Shaw, Chief of Staff to Representative Bynum. Just a brief overview on the Fisheries Enhancement Revolving Loan Fund. The fund was enacted in 1976 under AS 1610-500 through 560. Prior to 1981, loans were pre-sold to the Department of Revenue for funding. In 1981, the Fisheries Revolving Loan Fund became a official revolving loan fund. Loans are available for planning, construction, and operation of fish hatchery facilities, including pre-construction activities necessary to obtain a permit. Loans may be made available to regional associations or private nonprofit corporations who have obtained a private nonprofit hatchery permit from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Those loans may also be made for planning and pre-construction purposes. Maximum loan amount is $10 million with a maximum term of 30 years. The first 6 to 10 years of the loan do not accrue interest. And over the last five fiscal years, from FY21 to FY25, there was a total of $22,108,000 in loans that were given to these organizations. The biggest year was FY21, when $10.8 million was handed out. The smallest year was FY22, when only $1.6 million was handed out. But of those 13 loans over the last five fiscal years, the average amount was $1.7 million. So House Bill 253 amends AS 1610-500 relating to the declaration of policy for the Fisheries Enhancement Loan Program. And just to run through the sectional analysis on the bill, this section updates and clarifies the state's policy governing the Fisheries Enhancement Loan Program, expands loan eligibility to include federally recognized tribal organizations that operate fish hatcheries on an Indian reservation or under a federal permit, in addition to qualified regional associations. Section 2 amends AS 1610-510 relating to the powers and duties of the commissioner. This section updates the commissioner's authority under the Fisheries Enhancement Loan Program to explicitly include eligible tribal organizations alongside those qualified regional aquaculture associations and approved local nonprofit corporations. Conforming changes ensure tribal organizations are treated consistently throughout the statute while retaining existing provisions. Section 3 amends AS 1610-520A relating to loan limits to include the eligibility of the those tribal organizations as borrowers. Otherwise, it maintains all of the existing caps under the statute. Finally, Section 4 provides an effective date of July 1st, 2026.
Madam Chair, I did want to say, again, Jeremy Bynum, House Representative, House District 1, I did want to say thank you very much to your office and your staff for being available and helping prepare for this meeting and coordinating and collaborating with some of the concerns that there were with the bill, and also with further departments being readily available and engaging and collaborating with us. I know that there were some concerns initially when we brought this idea out. The bill was read across. I believe that we've worked with all those folks that I just mentioned to address those concerns. But specifically, one of the concerns had to do with if a loan is given to a tribal organization that would become eligible under this bill, that there may not be a requirement that they would participate in some of the fish tracking requirements that we have for the existing organizations that receive these loans. Working with my local community communities and in consultation with them, they are fully willing and wanting to work alongside our other partners in the industry and comply just like everybody else. And so we will have, we don't have it today, but we will have for the next time that we meet a substitute for this that will specifically address that concern in law to make sure that it is clear. The second item that was of concern had to do with the collateral of giving the loan and whether or not there was an ability to recap, to get back collateralization on the loan. We worked with Legislative Legal to get an opinion on that and the department to look at that as well. There's already existing statutes in place and rules and items in place that specifically already address that. So I think that the concern of whether or not when you give that loan out and whether or not the entity that is going to receive it is then responsible for payment of that loan and then what happens if payment doesn't occur, there's existing statute already in place, and I think the concern has been addressed. So we do have a legal memo for that, and the departments are available to answer any questions.
Thank you.
That you guys might have as well.
Okay. We do have a question, but before we go to your question, I do want to note that Ms. Yvonne Fink, loan manager of the Division of Investments, is here with us. We also, as we know, have our esteemed Commissioner of Fish and Game, Commissioner Doug Vincent Lang, as well as the Fish and Game Legislative Liaison, Mr. Feckel. So with that, Representative Kopp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Bynum, for bringing this important issue in front of the committee. A question I have, since we specifically raised the issue of Metlakatla Tribe, and my memory isn't clear on this, but there was litigation between the tribe and the state that ended up in federal court as to fisheries and particularly with waters off their reservation and whether or not those were tribal fish or was those state waters and state fish and could anybody from the public fish. And I forget how all that turned out. So how that relates to the bill is if we're using state money to collateralize a hatchery on a reservation, I would want to make sure that any otherwise legal person fishing in state waters would be able to catch those fish and there wouldn't be a, you know, got to stay 2 miles from the hatchery type thing. But I can't remember how that litigation turned out, but there was pretty significant litigation in the courts on that issue.
Are you aware of that, Representative Bynum?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And through the chair, Representative Kopp, that particular issue, I don't believe that issue is specifically related to this, but we will get to the, we will give to the committee an update on what's happening with that particular case. My understanding of what this will do is that it's not related to that specific lawsuit. I know that the Metlakatla Indian community, specifically when I've had conversations with them about the hatchery program, when those fish leave their waters, those fish are available for take wherever they might be. Now, when they enter into the areas that are under the control of the Metlakatla Indian community, obviously there are some restrictions for fishing within those waters. I do believe that they do allow folks through permit to fish there. So, but I don't have all the specific answers that might be able to address your concern or your question, but we will get the information that we can and we'll provide that to the committee.
Well, Representative Bynum, lucky for us, we have the commissioner here. Maybe he might be able to give us some additional information.
Lucky for us. I also have a question.
Okay.
Not for the commissioner. Well, maybe.
Yes, through the chair. So there is an ongoing lawsuit with Metlakatla, and the lawsuit is centered around whether Metlakatla has traditional fishing rights outside of the Metlakatla Indian reserve. That is, they're asking for permission to fish outside in waters of District 1 and District 2 and potentially District 3 without having a CFEC permit to fish in those waters. That litigation was heard one time at the district court level, federal district court in Alaska. It got bumped up to the appellate court and gets sent back down to the district court. So that's still in active litigation. My understanding with this bill is that if they're going to receive state money, that those fish will then become common property resources outside of the Metlakatla Indian Reservation or preserve there, and that we also worked with Representative Bynum to make sure that any funds that were used to produce fish, that there was that the fish was going to be done under the state permitting system, because we have to understand how many fish are going out. We have to understand the composition of those fish under our treaty agreement. So Representative Biden made sure that, one, they are common property resources once they're outside the Metlakatla Indian Preserve. And number two is that they are under state permitting, so we can require quota wire tags and a variety of other things to assess the catch of those fish outside the area.
Follow up. Yeah. Certainly, Representative Kopp.
Thank you, Commissioner. Bobby, this question is for you. How far from the shoreline does the preserve go as far as into navigable waters there?
I read that lawsuit about 2 weeks ago, and I honestly can't remember. I think it's a mile or 2 miles around Metcalfe Island, but I don't know the exact number.
Mm-hmm. Representative Kopp, I know that in our public or in our invited testimony, we have the mayor of Metlakatla who might be able to answer that question for you.
Thank you.
Representative Hemshoot, hold on, Commissioner. This may be for you.
Yeah, and I'm not actually sure. Thank you, through the chair. So to the sponsor, the memo, and you might have addressed this, but the memo talks about not being able to collateralize unless tribal immunity is waived. And so is that addressed in the bill? I don't see it in the bill, but I might be missing it.
Yes, so we initially thought that we might have to amend the bill in order to address that specific issue. After talking with legal and the department, there is no amendment necessary to make sure that we're making that requirement happen. In the legal memo, it points directly at statute on the requirements that are already there in order for them to even give the loan. But then they also point to the specific information from Metlakatla Indian community on what their requirements are and what they, when they accept these loans, and what they will do on immunity. So
I see. Follow up. And so I see here that the commissioner may adopt a regulation requiring that. So it could be done through regulation. It doesn't have to be in the bill.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there further questions? Seeing none, you're free, Commissioner.
Thank you, sir.
I see no other questions from this committee right now, so we will open up public testimony. And with that, we have the mayor of Metlakatla with us out online, Mr. Smith.
Yes, good morning, Chair and Fisheries Committee. This is Albert Smith, the mayor of Metlakatla. Indian community on the Nant Islands Reserve. I was, first of all, was there a question before? Because it sounded like you guys are trying to get a question at me, or you just want me to go ahead to start?
There was. Representative Kopp, would you like to repeat your question?
Yes, Mayor, thank you for being with us today. The question was the Metlakatla Reservation, how far off the coast does that extend as far as the tribe's control of fisheries off the coastline?
So I'd like to note that we have our own Department of Fishing Wildlife here on the reserve, and they're outstanding group, dedicated and hardworking. We do share a lot of our information with the state. and our tagging reports and marking our fish. The last 2 years, I'm actually parked in my car looking at some fish net pens right now. That these ones down here in Chester Bay in front of our community has 25 million chum salmon in it right now, fry, that are 100% marked and through the odorless marking we're all for doing that. I just want to be clear. And so to get to your question, it's 3,000 feet from mean low water, which is just over a half mile.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Smith. And if you would like to continue with your testimony, and before you do, let me be clear. I think I misspoke. This is not public testimony. This is invited testimony. We will have public testimony at our next hearing on this bill. Please go ahead, Mayor Smith.
Thank you, Chair. So I'm pretty excited about this bill. It's something that we've been working on, and I think approximately 4 years ago, we were working very closely with Jim Anderson, and we got all the applications submitted, turned in, all the details were ironed out on how to recover any collateral that may be, the swimming assets, you call it. That's how to recover any delinquent payments that would potentially occur, but we address that. So the importance of it to Metlakatla Indian community here on the Mid Islands Reserve and our reason for supporting it wholeheartedly is we're right in the middle of our hatchery was built along the time frames of when this loan program started back in the late 70s. In early 80s, and a lot of our infrastructure is aging, and we've been working on it through some funds through BIA. We are the only reserve in the state. We operate our own federally recognized fishery and hatchery, and very proud of the strides we've made in the last 10 years of the hatchery, and in these last 10 years we worked on modernizing, expanding. We do know that our fish that we release migrate, like all salmon. They migrate out to the ocean, the Gulf, all through the region, and we're totally fine with that. I mean, that's the nature of the salmon, and you know what's good for Metlakatla is good for the region, and it's good for the region, it's good for the state. With that said, we know a lot of our coho salmon, the silver salmon, kegs come back a lot caught outside of Sitka and the outside coast. Before they work their way inland, and that's great. I mean, we're all for being good partners to the region, and we'd love to see Southeast and Alaska thrive. And this bill could help with that. We're also I heard Commissioner Lang speak of needing a state hatchery permit. That's what this bill, and to my knowledge, is supposed to help us with. That was the all stop for us back 4 years ago when I was working closely with Jim Anderson on getting this, which he was very excited about and thought it was a perfect fit until we got to that portion of it. We're federally recognized sovereign nation. We're very proud and take that seriously. And I think that the requirements that come along with
the tagging requirements and the marking. So what Commissioner Lane mentioned with the coated wire tags, we are doing that to the same level as the state. And that's a little small little tag that's injected into the nose of the smolt on the Chinook salmon with king salmon and the silver salmon is coho salmon. With the chum salmon, the way we mark those and the same as the state is through an otoliths mark, which is in the ear bone. And you do that with changing the temperature of the water by at least 4 degrees. And you rotate that. And there's a certain formula that each hatchery gets that they need to follow. And it's X amount of hours. And I can get into detail, but I don't think we need to. The bottom line is that for the last 2 years in a row now, we've marked 100% of the chums through that odorless marking, and we are following the same regulations as the state. We do also participate in the Pacific Salmon Treaty meetings and stuff, and we're following all those king salmon, the Chinook salmon percentage that they require for the coated wire tags that are injected into the nose. So I think that this bill would, you know, not only help the region, Malacala, but the region and the fairly recognized tribes throughout. So with that, if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Do we have any questions for the mayor? Representative Hemshoot?
Thank you. Through the chair, Mayor Smith, thank you for being with us this morning. It's always great to hear your voice. Hey, do the other tribes in Southeast support the bill? So the Alliance of Southeast, Sovereign Southeast Tribes, or Lincoln and Haida as a regional tribe, are they in support of this? If you're able to say, I can certainly check with them.
I would recommend that you check with them. I can't speak for them, and I haven't asked.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jeremy Bynum, Representative House District 1. Specifically, we have been doing outreach and consultation with the other tribes. I've not received back negative feedback for this yet. I'm hoping not. And so we will continue those efforts to have collaboration with them, and we will share any findings that we have from them to the committee.
Thank you. Other questions? Representative Vance?
I just want clarification. I think I heard you say that you have an amended version of sponsor substitute, or did I hear incorrectly? You had some changes coming?
Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, there will be a change coming in. It is to specifically address the language in the bill to align with the requirement, basically, so that they're marking fish and making sure that we're in compliance. The bill currently doesn't have that conforming language in it. And so the change that you will be seeing will be to make sure that the bill does conform with that requirement. I think the commissioner could probably give additional information if it's necessary.
Follow up. So this bill looks very prescriptive towards Metlakatla. And I'm wondering what the potential for other federally recognized tribes to have fish hatcheries are in the future, instead of being very specific. This one says fish hatcheries on an Indian reservation. Well, that's just one. Why did you choose to be this prescriptive rather than permissive?
Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Really quick, give me one moment here. Let me consult with my chief here that what the bill should be doing is it should be identifying effectively the Indian reservation and or a federally recognized tribe. So, Mr. Shaw, do you have a...
Yes. Thank you, Representative Bynum. Through the chair, Representative Vance.
You could identify yourself for the record, please.
Thank you. Trevor Shaw, staff to Representative Bynum. The wording specifically in the bill is on an Indian reservation or operating under a federal permit. And so any additional tribal organizations in the future that obtain a federal permit or a state permit, as Representative Bynum was mentioning the specific language for a potential committee substitute, would provide a provision that requires that any of these tribal organizations that are now eligible for the Fisheries Enhancement Loan Program funding meet the criteria for an ADF&G salmon hatchery permit under specific state statutes. And so it was specifically written that this way because not all there's provisions in federal law that allow for Metlakatla being on the Annette Island Reserve to operate their own hatchery without even necessarily having a federal permit. And so it truly was actually written to be very broad because they could they do have a federal permit, but they're not required to have one. And so – but also any additional organizations in the future that obtain one of those permits would be eligible as well.
Follow-up?
Representative Vance.
Thank you for that clarification. This is about the loan program. Mm-hmm. And I know that with them being a tribe, they can access loans that other Alaskan organizations cannot simply because they are a federally recognized tribe. Can you describe the need of why you brought this bill forward? We've heard about the technical components of it and a lot of the legal components. Can you describe the need of why you decided to bring this bill forward?
Representative Bynum.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Vance, for the question. The need for wanting to have this come forward is so that we can make sure that the Metlakatla Indian community has the equal access that all of our other Alaskans that are operating under these permits have. And so we want to just create an opportunity for collaboration with Metlakatla Indian community and that they have the equal access that the other organizations have. So that's basically the reason why this was brought forward. We know that there's no requirement that a loan is given. They have to make the case just like everybody else would to become eligible and provide all of the information for making sure that they meet eligibility and that they are also meet those collateral requirements. So that was the intended purpose.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? With that, I am going to close public testimony, and I am not going to set an amendment deadline until we get the sponsor substitute. And as soon as we get the sponsor substitute, it will go out to all committee members, and then we will set an amendment deadline at that time. So, brief at ease. Was not public testimony. That was invited testimony. And after we get the sponsor substitute and at our next hearing on this legislation, we will have public testimony. So to be clear on that, thank you, Representative Hemshoot. So with that, we will send that information out to this committee. So we are still trying to formulate our next week's committee. We will have our subcommittee on Tuesday at 10 o'clock on Tuesday, and seeing no further business to come before this committee, we will adjourn at 11:05.